included in the cartoon Dragon Ball Z to teach young children about Kung Fu. The ideas and lessons about real Kung Fu found in Dragon Ball Z can be simple and clear or subtle and profound. This series of videos will discuss the various real-life Kung Fu ideas and lessons that are presented in the cartoon Dragon Ball Z. This first video will focus on Master Roshi, who is the Kung Fu master that teaches Kung Fu to Goku. Master Roshi is known as the Turtle Hermit because he wears a turtle shell on his back, as shown in this picture. The body of Master Roshi has a distinctive look to it because of the turtle shell on his back. With the turtle shell on his back, Master Roshi's back has a concave curve shape from the top to the bottom. Master Roshi's head looks like it has to be held forward so it does not hit the top of the turtle shell. Master Roshi's legs look like they are bent at the knees so that they do not hit the bottom of the turtle shell. According to Happy Theory, the body posture of Master Roshi the Turtle Hermit is modeled on the real-life effects that real-life Kung Fu has on real people. This picture shows a human skeleton standing straight up. The line in this picture emphasizes that the skeleton is mostly straight from the feet up to the head. In the practice of a Kung Fu style called Tai Chi, the practitioner holds their body in a specific posture as they do the Tai Chi form. The practitioner will be told to bend their knees so that their body lowers towards the ground. At the same time, the practitioner should tuck their tailbone under their body as demonstrated in the animation. The practitioner is also supposed to slightly drop their chin down towards their chest. After moving into the Tai Chi posture, the spine of the skeleton has a concave shape from the top of the head to the bottom of the tailbone. This picture shows a real human being in the midst of doing the Tai Chi form. This comparison picture emphasizes how the back of the skeleton and the real person both have a curved shape. As can be seen in this comparison picture, a person standing in the Tai Chi posture looks like Master Roshi with a turtle shell on his back. The real person and Master Roshi both have a concave curve shape to their back. Both of their heads are pushed forwards, and both of them have their knees bent. According to Happy Theory, the people who created Dragon Ball Z purposefully created the body of Master Roshi so that it looks like the body of someone who has practiced Tai Chi for a long time. According to Happy Theory, the reason Master Roshi is called the Turtle Hermit is that long-term practice of Tai Chi will change the back of the practitioner so that it has a permanent concave curve shape. The concave curve shape of the human back when practicing Tai Chi looks like the curved shell of a turtle. This picture shows the turtle shell from Master Roshi placed behind the body of the Tai Chi practitioner. The curves in this picture highlight the similarity between the curved shape of the man's body and the turtle shell. In this picture, the turtle shell has been superimposed over the Tai Chi man's back. The real-life man in the Tai Chi posture with a turtle shell on his back looks like the cartoon character Master Roshi the Turtle Hermit in the cartoon Dragon Ball Z.
Okay.
That first is happy.
First point. He keeps saying cartoon instead of anime, and it bothers me. Second point. The genericness whenever we're talking about various styles of what you would call Kung Fu.
Right.
And the fact that the dynamic between, for example, the Turtle School and Crane School in the original Dragon Ball is completely missed here.
Yeah.
The fact that the guy's name is Muten Roshi, which is more of a title than a name, Kame Sennin, the Turtle Hermit,
right,
is also completely missed here. the purpose of the shell being that it's essentially just weighted clothing. It's the same thing that they did in the rest of the series with the weighted clothes, just what was it, 50 or 100 kilos or something like that? It was heavy as shit.
Yeah.
They completely skipped over that. No, it was basically strength training.
Yeah. This guy pulled the classic completely insane person move and projected his own personal his iconography, his system, his folk etymology, he projected it onto this cartoon. It's a fascinating YouTube channel, to say the least. All the videos are like that, though. So if that was too grating, that's
probably
one version of YouTube's idea of energy work or internal power. This is what some of the weirdos think.
Okay, so being that a lot of people didn't watch the original Dragon Ball, they came in and see. There's a lot of stuff that I don't know if people got from that. I think all of us, the majority of us here, we were a little bit older when this stuff was coming overseas, so we probably got exposed to it earlier than a lot of people. A lot of the people that got exposed to this kind of thing, it was starting with DBZ. It wasn't starting with the original Dragon Ball. At the point in the series where Goku goes to live with Master Roshi and learn martial arts from him, first and foremost, he was raised by a guy who had trained under Roshi years before. So his foster father was already somewhat, not a master, but at the very least an adept when it came to martial arts. He had experience. He taught him various things to the point that whenever they were getting to the representation of projecting your inner force, in the case of the Turtle School's Kamehameha, the very first time Goku as a kid, he was 15 if that counts. He was supposedly 15 or 12, depending on the time one you use. He had already been training since he was a child, a very, very small child by that point. And he had already been familiarized with various concepts of the school. He might not have known it on a conscious level, but the training for the Turtle School in particular was very much Mr. Miyagi, wax on, wax off. I'm not going to teach you techniques as much as I'm going to put you down the path to learning these things by living them and doing them in day-to-day life. That same thought from Miyamoto Musashi, where to know a thousand things, know one thing. To see the way broadly is to see it in all things.
Yeah, which is actually a real life component of at least Taoist influenced martial arts in China. Xing Yi specifically has like the Taoist kung fu progression. Train the bones, train the muscles, train the energy. Return to emptiness. The whole. system kind of worked out and perfected by Guo Yunshen and a couple of other guys. So it's Dragon Ball is an easy go-to for examples of training the energy or like training the internal potential or like the unseen untapped potential of people in like a pop culture way.
I think Dragon Ball is, and I don't think a lot of people get this, it might be a Japanese series, it might be an anime, but the original Dragon Ball had a decidedly Chinese flavor to it. I mean, look at the outfit at the beginning of Dragon Ball when they show Gohan as a little kid. Look at the outfit he's wearing. He's wearing like a little Chinese prince-like outfit.
Yeah, Journey to the West. It was a version of Journey to the West. Like a stylized version of it. So Goku, Son Goku is obviously the Monkey King's actual name.
Sun Wukong, right?
Yeah, in Chinese it's Sun Wukong. The Japanese is Son Goku.
He was expressly the Monkey King from the get-go.
Yeah, and then in the, you see in his supporting cast from the original Dragon Ball, you see some of the other characters from Journey to the West. Oolong is Z, you know, just stuff like yeah, you said, you know, bunch of people are perverts, you know, there's a couple of dumb chicks, you know, people look like demons. Yeah. So it started as that and just sort of transformed into a battle manga as it went on, and they started having tournament arcs. And those were awesome, you know, Piccolo, and then, you know, the more popular Piccolo, get introduced in that.
How about this? When they get to Dragon Ball Z and he dies for the first time, he goes to the other world, and he goes on the run the Snake Way, going to King Kai's house, right?
Right.
They leave out, they don't really make a big deal about the fact that he gets King Enma's fruit, but that was a big deal in the original Journey to the West,
yeah,
where he gets the fruit. They don't really talk about that very much.
Yeah. You can't have him achieve immortality and then super immortality, because it kind of makes everything else pointless. You know, that's why no one could ever successfully wish for immortality with the Dragon Balls.
The
story becomes pointless. You know, no one can beat them.
They did in the filler episodes, Garlic Jr., which didn't happen in the manga at all.
No. Dragon Ball. Fun stuff. A series that comes up a lot, like when this idea was originally hatched, somebody mentioned Nen in Hunter x Hunter as an example of like a more modern depiction of an internal power derived from martial arts in a manga or an anime. Do either of you guys know that one?
I'm only very vaguely aware of Hunter x Hunter. I know about it, but I haven't read it. I haven't watched it. I'm not as up on it. So how do they show it in that series?
It's basically, you know, the energy that your body produces by being alive is constantly leaking out. That's your aura. And these are methods to like shape it and control it, to conserve it, you know, to not necessarily let it leak away endlessly, and to kind of contain it and build it up and refine how you use it. It's really detailed. There's a lot of like, you know, sub skills and sub areas and subsets and unique expression. That's one of the things I think that people like about the series, is that characters develop like really, really personalized expressions of their abilities. And they have different specialties. Like there's some, like the main character like uses it to enhance his physical body and like gets in close and actually fist fights people. So there's, you know, people like that enhance themselves. There's people that like make objects, like, you know, make an object out of nothing that has like a magic power or like a special quality to it or an intelligence of its own. You know, there are people who can kind of shoot it like power blasts or like fireballs and stuff. There's a few different types of ways to use it. So a lot of the drama in the story is, you know, when characters encounter each other, they try to figure out each other's power, like figure out what the other person can do and how it works, you know, so you can figure out a way around it, try to protect yourself from their like special ability.
It's the work of an enemy stand.
Yeah, there are elements like that, but it doesn't have a like story breaking aspect to it the way stands do from JoJo.
The thing about stands that people lose, I didn't even want to bring up stands on this because I don't think that stands are the best representation of internal power in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
No.
But something really important that shows up in the first episode of Part 3 and never comes up again is that everything that was established in the first two parts in regards to Ripple or Hamon or however you want to call it, stands are supposed to be spirit Hamon. They're supposed to be the ripple energy of the spirit. So it's supposed to be a more pure representation of this inner power without having to go through the human body as an intermediary.
Yeah.
And they bring that up one time. If I remember right, the character Joseph Joestar brings it up one time and it's never brought up again.
Nope.
So it's very much the same thing, that idea of internal power, but represented individually, and it can manifest in a myriad of ways.
Yeah.
So in that, that's the one thing that part 3, 4, 5, 6, not 7 and 8 is a shit show. We're not going to talk about 7 and 8. But 3, 4, 5, and 6 technically stands are that same idea that you get from Hunter Hunter when it comes to your inner power represented in a uniquely personal way. I really like that.
Yeah. Those are some of the things that make those series very interesting. JoJo's is completely batshit insane. To be sure. Matt, do you know JoJo's Bizarre Adventure?
So I watched the last episode. I don't know if I watched. I think I watched, like, I had a friend that said that most of them were bad, that I should really watch. Like, so he, like, showed me, like, I watched, like, 4 of them, including the ending. I liked it. It was cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so he watched basically all of part 3 where Dio is present, and that was it.
Oh, my God. Dio's the best character.
Some, like, deal with the devil guy.
Yeah.
Some kind of that. I just want that one.
Yeah. He finds an Aztec mask and becomes a vampire.
Cool. And I didn't even know if it was supposed to be Aztec originally. I think it was supposed to be, like, Mesopotamian or something, and then they just screwed it translation and it became Aztec.
Yeah. But he had this mask. It made him a vampire, you know, and he was just going to take over the world. And he started, like, shrieking and being ridiculous. It's
JoJo?
Awesome. No, this character, Dio Brand. And he already talked about himself in third person and shit. It's hilarious.
Yo.
I'm going to go ahead and go on the record here and say that part 1 is the best part.
Yeah.
Not only because it is the best one in terms of the martial arts aspect.
I probably watched the first one too. I think I did. I think I probably did watch that. I think
the first part is like 9 to 12 episodes long. It's not very long at all.
12 episodes. I probably watched, like, the first couple, or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. This happy face do gooder kid learns this, like, secret martial art.
And he's voiced by the same guy that voices Ichigo. He's voiced by the Black Power Ranger. So, you know, he's clearly the best protagonist. He's voiced by a Power Ranger. So automatically yeah, he wins. But no, the reason that I liked it was because it had this element of universal good and universal evil. You had that, not universal good and universal evil, but, like, ultimate good and ultimate evil. You had that element of duality there, and that they balanced each other out. And that was the reason why they didn't really kill each other off. Even to the point of plot holes, but we're not going to get into that. Like I said, part 3 through 6 didn't happen. 7 and 8 clearly didn't happen. Part 1 and 2 are relevant, though. When we're talking about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, we talk about the Hamon or Ripple energy. They equate it with sunlight. You have to know, to get into this, you have to know that in part 1 and part 2, the bad guys are basically vampires. And this Ripple energy has something in common with sunlight. It's the life energy of the human, but it has the same energetic characteristic as sunlight. So in channeling this energy, the effect that it has, that it imparts onto techniques that the character performs, is the same thing as if this vampire were exposed to a full blast dose of sunlight. But it's not sunlight. It's not that they're channeling the sun through their body. It's that this is their vital essence expressed in whatever technique, or in the case of the first guy, it's a flurry of punches because that's all he ever did. Second thing I'm going to go on the record on, Joseph Joestar is Star Platinum, and you're not going to convince me otherwise. Same guy, just dead. All right. So let's get on to the next thing.
Oh, man, JoJo's.
That was good.
Just endless series of punches. Ah, that's the best shit. I love that stuff. Fist of the North Star, obviously, is another which immediately comes out of that because of endless flurries of punches and just shouting.
Oh, yeah.
People saying cool lines.
You look at the outfit that that Jonathan Joestar ends part 1 wearing.
Yeah.
Well, not when he dies, but the final fight with Dio Brando. Yeah. Jonathan Joestar is wearing an outfit that was straight up Kenshiro's outfit.
Yeah.
But with gloves. It's the cool. Same shit.
It's the same thing, pretty much. Yeah, very much like that whole aesthetic was really popular at the time. And it's interesting looking back on it, like, knowing how things developed. for like
everybody was ripping off Fist of the North Star.
Yeah, Fist of the North Star is the shit. But that, like, Fist of the North Star is a very realistic, like an unrealistic, realistic depiction of martial arts, because he uses real, you know, an exaggerated version of something real, the real, you know, chi circulatory system in the body, with the various chi cavities and whatnot and the meridians.
I think that Fist of the North Star, Baki the Grappler, and Kengan Ashura and Kengan Omega are the only three I've ever seen where they have the actual meridians of the pressure points in the manga. I don't know if that conveyed to the anime for all three of those, but in the manga, they do bring up the pressure points, specifically the energetic meridians in the body.
Yeah. And that's really where it's at. There's a lot of like really interesting, cool stuff that you actually do learn how to do when you take the time to really learn about the meridians and the circulation and, you know, this channel flows in this part of the body, in this direction. You know, a lot of people don't want to take the time to learn that and learn those rules, like the rules about timing strikes. And at this time of day, this meridian is most active. So a strike to this point will have a more desirable effect if you do it at this time of day. You know, they scoff
all right
at that, but there actually is something to it. You know, there is, you know, special hand forms to strike specific cavities and stuff like that. It's interesting.
You know, I have to bring it up. Okay, so Kiss of the Dragon.
Yeah.
That
movie is so much fun.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, Jet Li as a leading man. It's like dumb. Like I for a few years I was like mad at that movie because it's better than I think it has a right to be. Honestly, it's just like, this is like a trash movie. It's so horrible. It was made for stupid, dirty people. I hate this movie, but it's so fucking good. Like, just fighting with it. That and Romeo Must Die. I love Romeo Must Die for the same reason I love Belly. Because it just doesn't make any sense and it can't make any sense, but it's awesome.
The thing that got me with Kiss of the Dragon is the idea of the little dart, the little thing he pulls out of the, what was it, bracelet?
Yeah.
He pulls out the little dart. He's putting that into a specific pressure point. And yeah, the idea is that he's performing the Den Mach, right?
Yeah.
That's the
idea. Literally using an acupuncture needle to go and like hit a death point. Like a hit a
kill. Yeah. He's hitting the exact right spot at the exact site, the exact right time of day. And so what that gave me as a kid when I watched it, I'm reading all of this stuff and watching this movie, and then, okay, so it's like, so it means the energetic system, the nervous system, and the circulatory system are all taken together, kind of like you remember the overhead projectors they used when we were in school?
Yeah,
how you could put down one sheet and it would show you one thing, and you could lay another sheet on top of that and another sheet on top of that and shows you the whole graph. Well, yeah, that's this thing, but it's like the energetic, nervous, and circulatory systems all put together. And that's basically what learning how to use this these pressure point techniques in reality outside of fiction, that's basically what it is.
Yeah,
it's a combination of the blood, the energy, the nerves. The energy is the nerves and the blood put together, basically.
Yeah, it is. It really is causing reactions in the body, sensations in the body. And in the heat of like an adrenaline-fueled fight or flight moment, people will take it the wrong way and exacerbate and exaggerate the effect. So I showed the guy that I refer to as the man called Tubbs, you know, friend of mine that I had been teaching Xing Yi to. He was not a diligent student, did not work hard. But I was showing him about like the whole idea of it's important to understand which direction the meridians flow in, because there's yin ones and yang ones, you know. Yin ones flow down, yang ones flow up. You know, there's a whole series of ideas like that. And he was like, oh, what does that matter? You know, I'm like, all right, well, for healing purposes, you know, when you exercise and you're sore from overtraining and you want to recover, you use these ideas in the massage. So you help speed up your own recovery by doing self-massage as part of your recovery practice. Before you go to bed, you do a little stretching, do a little self-massage, warm the hands up, do a dry bath, you know, really relax yourself, get the full benefit, get a deep sleep quick. You know, when you're fighting somebody, you go against the grain. So the opposite of what you do for your self-recovery, you use it in reverse against an opponent. You disrupt them. You make them feel weird and distracted. You give them something to worry about. You know, you make them stop paying attention to defending against you. They're worried about like, oh, did you like set a chi time bomb in their arm for them to have a heart attack later on? And while they're worried about that, they drop their hands a little bit and you drill them right in the nose. Like, you win the fight. And he's like, oh, that shit wouldn't work. So I'm like, put your hands up. Like, I'll now show you. So I gave him one where I kind of gave him a couple of points on the chest and made all the chi that was collected in his upper body from the tension that he would hold in his chest drop down into his belly. And it distracted him so much that he just stood there and put his arms out to the side and kind of looked and was like, oh my God. And when he was looking at his belly, right when he looked up at me, I had my hand like this and I just came right in and I drilled him one right in the belly button, like blap, right in the belly. And he goes, oh, and kind of fell back on his ass. And he was like, how did you do that? I was like, I drained the chi out of your upper, out of your upper section. He's like, well, how did you do that? I was like, I used the meridians you have, you know, when you know which way they flow, you can get different effects going. He's like, what the? This and that. I was like, yeah, all that shit I said about I can make people piss blood if I want. I can make it wait an hour and have them piss blood. Like, this is how you get those effects. You have to know about anatomy. You have to know about how the body works. Then you can do things like this. And he's like, I thought it was just you were so strong. I'm like, the fuck? Like, what kind of world do you live in? Like, you know, it's Superman doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the planets away. Like, you're at the grown man level, you're supposed to be having deeper conversations. But here he is, you know, 35 years old, and he's like, oh, well, Superman doesn't do push-ups. He pushes Earth away. Like, he's being a goofball about shit. It's like, no, man, this stuff is real. The stuff in the Kung Fu movies is interesting because it's based on stuff that's real. You can learn.
If you want to show people a very basic representation of this,
yeah.
You know, you can get liver shot from the left or the right side, right? Because of the way the liver sits in the human body, you can get liver shot from the left or the right side. You'll observe a very, very different effect in a person if you give them a liver shot from the left side of their body as if you give them a liver shot on the right side of their body. It's basically the difference between that hurt really bad and I pissed my pants a little bit. And on this side, your legs give out.
Yeah,
you can't even stand. It drops everything down to the floor.
Yeah, the benefit of learning that stuff. Like we did a whole episode about how important anatomical targets are. Learning basic anatomy. If you're learning martial arts, you know, if you're one of these pacifist weirdo types that doesn't want to attack, you know, you still have to learn it because you need to know what you need to defend on your own body. You know, which parts are vulnerable, what you need to be aware of.
The first time I memorized the meridian chart, I made sure never to be in a position where I was going to be struck under my left, sixth rib at 9:30 PM. I mean, it gets really, really specific.
Yeah.
And the reason for that was because that would be when the blood and nerves are going to be most inclined. It's going to rush to the genital region. Yeah, no. Okay. Not having a kiss of the dragon to the nuts. Blood. Not having that.
Yeah. You can get, I mean, if there's not the Fist of the North Star level isn't real as far as I know, but there are a lot of actual, you know, the Shaw Brothers movies, there are some representations of point striking that are pretty realistic. You know, not obviously, you know, not, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon level where people are being frozen in place, you know, perfectly paralyzed in a pose. That sort of thing isn't real as far as I know, but numbing limbs, paralyzing limbs, causing pain, causing like loss of function, you know, all that stuff is pretty realistic and fairly easy to do. Like, it doesn't take a whole lot of special knowledge. You can, a clever person can figure that stuff out. I learned how to mess with nerves and like turn nerves off from learning Chin Na at YMAA. So
here's a good example I like to use whenever I'm talking about this stuff. And to keep it with the pop culture stuff, we'll talk about the source of it. So if we're talking about fictional representations of fighting and martial arts especially, then look no further than Hajime no Ippo. It's a boxing anime, right? Boxing manga. The way that they show certain boxing techniques is a dramatic exaggeration of the real technique. In the case of the Dempsey roll, you're not going to roll and 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 then punch. You're not going to do that. That's not how the Dempsey roll works. But it conveys better what's going on to an audience that doesn't practice boxing.
Yeah.
If you put it that way, it shows them, okay, that's what's happening in this technique. I get it. I understand what's happening. Yeah. Whereas in the real technique, no, it's just drop step, trigger step, throw a hook, drop step, trigger step, throw a hook. Or really drop step, throw a hook, trigger step, throw a hook, drop step, trigger step, throw a hook. You get what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
The fictional representation is a extremely exaggerated version of the real thing.
Yeah.
And we all know that, but we're putting that out for who we're talking to.
Right. Trying to help the masses improve their terrible kung fu. the original tagline for the site. but that's yeah, actually Hajime no Ippo is a less obvious but excellent example for these depictions of what it can do. It's more realistic in the sense that it does seem to focus more on like mechanical stuff, you know, like things you do with your body. Not so much the overly elaborate, ridiculous power systems from some of the more fantastical series.
I kind of came into this with a bit of a loaded gun when it comes to the topic of internal power. I know that I sent it to you. I know you've read it, but it's been several years. But I actually talked a little bit about the about ki in terms of the ki-ai, which
I remember that one.
For the viewers, listeners that don't know, I'm a karate guy as well. I don't think you can make a clean distinction between kung fu and karate. I don't think it's possible to do that. People do it, but it's more like a marketing thing. If we're talking about what is, then it is what it is. So, talking about ki, people have this really far out view of what it is. We see it in pop culture as like the aura circling around the character in the show. We see it as the fireballs they throw and stuff.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's not what it is in real life. So, if we're looking at ki, it's translated as energy. And that's all well and good, but that's not specific enough. The word that I think is the best is vitality.
Yeah.
The vital essence of the human.
Yeah. Yeah. The, you know, the big innovation in Chinese martial arts was taking the medical system and applying it to the boxing system. So that's where you start seeing, it eventually settled down by the end of the Qing dynasty in the, you know, early 20th century during the Republic. They settled into terms, you know, like using qi to talk about energy. But earlier in some traditions and in the medical literature, they talk about jing shen, like vital spirit or like essential spirit. It's sort of like the vital animating aspect of life force. So for during the Qing Dynasty, certain more advanced martial arts talked about, you know, Jing Shen, like in some of the Taiji classics for some of the family styles. They'll talk about, you know, using the qi to, you know, you train the body to kind of make the qi more pure, you know, the regular Jing, the like regular essence gets refined and the body starts to generate more pure qi. That gets refined more and you start to generate a more pure and refined spirit, Shen, you know? So the purest, most refined, most numinous, high quality spirit, you know, the Jing Shen, the essential spirit, the purest spirit is like the highest expression of overall capacity or capability for like a physical organism. But it's like from some of the deeper, more advanced elements of martial arts that fell off through the 20th century because people started having more and more trouble with the more advanced levels and concepts, you know? So even in Chinese martial arts, you have people, you know, powerful boxing systems like Bagua Zhang and Taiji Chuan are reduced to just health practice because people can barely figure out how to generate qi in their own body. So, you know, they can't have a qi-based training system to develop fighting capability. They can barely get the qi, so they never get to the fighting. And it's disappointing.
Can you say that one more time? Because I always mispronounce it. It's the combative forms with Tai Chi.
Taiji Chuan?
Taiji Chuan, yeah.
Chuan, yeah. It's like, it's when you use the pinyin transliteration that the communists push now, the most popular one now, the most commonly used one today, you would spell the word Chuan that literally means fist, but can also kind of colloquially mean like boxing or martial arts. You would transliterate it as Q-U-A-N, pronounce it as like C-H-U-A-N, Chuan. Okay. For any of the Chinese styles, you'd get that. That's what, you know, what you would go for.
That explains why I've always mispronounced it.
Well, for the longest time, the Wade Giles system was more popular in the West. So that's a completely, that's like an older from the 50s and 60s way of transliterating it. You know, pinyin will translate Dao from Taoism. We'll transliterate it as D-A-O. Wade Giles would transliterate it as T-A-O. You're still supposed to pronounce it Dao, but people see a T and just say T, so they say Tao. And then you have someone like me saying something about, yeah, I'll teach you Taoist meditation. And if someone smugly being like, it's Taoist. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, you're the teacher now. You're the fucking teacher. All right, maybe I should be paying you then instead, dickhead.
Hey man, I'm the guy that's like 10 years younger at being mispronouncing everything. But whenever you say Tao, I don't question it.
Yeah. I mean, it really is like a preference thing, you know. If you're gonna, like, you can be a jackass about it and be a stickler, but it's really
those guys are always gonna
get the point. You know, I Zhuangzi being my favorite philosopher and my favorite book, one of the points that he makes all the time is, you know, words are only there to convey a meaning. Once you get the meaning, you don't need the words anymore. So, you know, being a grammar Nazi, being, you know, a stickler for pronunciation, being a stickler for procedure and stuff like that, it's like, yeah, it's only there. It's there to serve a purpose. Once the purpose is served, you let it go, you know? You only need the net to catch a fish. Once you have a fish, you don't need the net. You know, you have a snare to catch a rabbit. If you have the rabbit, you don't need the snare.
We're going to start getting into some philosophical shit that we weren't setting out to talk about. So we're going to have to pivot
here.
That's
the beauty of this stuff. It does ramble and range like that. And I do usually end up bringing up Zhuangzi at some point because a lot of his ideas did go into developing the the strategies and the rationale behind the martial arts that I do practice. So it kind of worked out really well. I didn't realize it when I started doing all this, but the book that I love to read the most and the martial arts that I love to practice the most, like they actually did end up being pretty intimately connected in ways that I didn't expect. So it worked out well.
What I was going to ask you a minute ago is, did you see that thing? He's pretty famous on the internet for saying some disparaging things about various forms of old Chinese martial arts. But I mentioned one time to you this Ramsey Dewey guy, because when he was actively fighting in MMA, his Sanda teacher took them to meet this guy to learn some Tai Chi Chuan.
Yeah.
And this guy was in his 80s. He was an old man. And what he kept talking about was how every time the guy kept, he was this old guy and he was walking through the forms. And when they walked up to him, he said, all right, okay, put your hands up. Come at me. And he said, he asked the translator, he said, what did he say? And he said, just put your hands up and come at him. He said, that can't be right. So he stepped forward as if he was going to do some pushing hands or something. And the guy, as soon as he put his hands on the guy, he was on the ground.
Yeah.
And he said, he couldn't believe it. And he got back up. And that plays out several times over the course of that story. Every single time he went, even within this guy's range, he found himself on the ground. And he had no idea how he got there.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the fun.
There are a lot of like cool mechanical tricks. There's sensitivity tricks. There's like sensory feedback tricks that you can learn as you get more experienced with like softer martial arts. And that's a big advantage in taking care of somebody that might have physical superiority over you.
Hang on. Back up a little bit, because it's as easy as breathing for you. And I know what you mean by it. Yeah. And everybody else that's here listening, we know what you mean by it. But it's some people that are going to be watching this playback later, they might not know what you mean when you say softer. So talk about that for a second.
Some people will say that like a soft, hard distinction in categorizing martial arts isn't really fair, because you know you need to use muscular force to actually strike people, and you know opinions about softness and hardness are subjective and all this other stuff. But it's actually really simple. You know what makes a style soft is if in the course of practicing you have an extremely low amount of physical tension in your muscles while you're moving through your practice routines. Tai Chi Chuan, Jingyi Chuan, Bagua Zhang, you know, Pigua Zhang, Baji Chuan, Tongbei Chuan, like some of these martial arts from Northern and Central China, they very much qualify as soft, because while they're doing it, you have to have like a relatively loose body, large ranges of motion, like big sweeping mechanical actions. Harder styles would be like some of these southern styles, like Hungar, the like five family styles in southern China, where they're like they have a lot of isometric tension, and you see them like fucking moving through these staccato, you know, they look heavy, they look punishing, they look hard, they look like rocks, you know, banging through these routines.
Dog boxing, I think it is. Would that be a
sub? That's the kind of thing you would see like that. Yeah. From Fujian, like rolling around using, you know, leg techniques, ground techniques, ground fighting, ground grappling, stuff like that. Like those are like harder styles. So like a hard, soft distinction, you can get different approaches to the end goal of having like high physical capability and then a high kind of sensory capability as well, like situational awareness, the ability to read intent and body language in an opponent, stuff like that. Like when you're squared off against somebody else, you know, do you have that sensitivity to be able to kind of spot their tells? How are they about to attack? Is this guy going to throw a kick? Is he going to punch? Is it going to be high, low, left, right? You know, how will this person come in? Softer martial arts will focus on kind of developing that part first, the situational awareness, the sensory aspect first, And then over time, your body kind of builds up. You build up.
You build a Bagua body, basically.
You build the style specific body over time. After you get the style specific mindset, whereas in a lot of the Southern styles, Shaolin derived styles and stuff like that in China, first we teach you how to fight, and then after you can fight, depending on how well you fight, we'll say like, hey, you know how you do this? Well, did you ever think about this other thing? And it's kind of like a way to lead you into deeper levels of realization and sophistication. So like my teacher, Dr. Yang Zhuangming, will say external styles, hard styles go from outside to inside, internal styles go from inside to outside.
You know what's a really good pop culture example of this?
Yeah.
In the Karate Kid series, you have the Miyagi-Do types and you have the Cobra Kai types.
Yeah.
That's your soft part right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fairly accurate example too, because it really is like there is kind of like a strategic aspect to the way soft and hard end up expressing themselves as well, because harder styles in Chinese martial arts will just kind of like try to beat you up from the outside, break your arms, give you a black eye, bruise you up, get you to surrender that way. An internal style will get in real close, put their hand on you, make you piss blood for a weekend, clap you right there on the bladder or something, or poke you up under the solar plexus and just kind of make you do that thing where you kind of throw up and have the wind knocked out of you at the same time. All the fun stuff.
Every time that happens in our dojo, we have this moment where all the people that have been there before start shouting, blow, 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 blow out as hard as you can. And the guy that just got hit has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, little things.
But when he thinks about it later.
Those are some of the things that, like, one of the nice things about having people kind of do bare knuckle sparring is you get an opportunity to teach them little recovery things like that. You're gonna get the wind knocked out of you in your life from things other than just fighting. These things are gonna happen. Do you know how to recover? Like, there are ways to recover from the bumps and bruises of daily life or work life. That's a low-grade traumatology, low-grade bone setting, low-grade bruise recovery, that kind of stuff you can pick up from the more rough and tumble aspects of training martial arts. I think some of these pop culture depictions, like these anime and manga, and the movies, they do pretty good depictions of showing that, like, main character gets their ass kicked, teacher shows them, like, yeah, this is how you make the, this is how you make the jiao. You put it on the bruises and like you heal. This is how, like, oh, you do the special training. This is the ointment you put on your hands, or, you do this and you get the special, you get the special steel skin or whatever.
Well, that's the reason that I went to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure with part one, where they put so much emphasis on the breath. Part one and two, the mechanism by which the ripple or hamon energy works is by their breathing. If they can't breathe, they can't control it. That resonates immediately. That there's a certain element of breath that's involved with it. For example, with the ki, if you can't breathe, then you can't execute the ki. You can't use that that particular technique of harmonizing the marriage of energy with intention with the energy itself. If you can't breathe, it's very synchronous. It's the reason why people think that it's just. A lot of people that practice Japanese martial arts, they just think that ki means that you yell. That's what they think. They think it means that you just shout.
Yeah.
But no, that's not it at all. It's a combination of the contraction, the intra-abdominal pressure synchronized with the breath.
Yeah.
That's actually the technique, but they never get to that point.
Yeah. Trying to explain to somebody that I'm punching somebody with a vacuum that I made somewhere else. you know, they start giving you those looks like, you know, you can't use certain terms. You can't actually get into the real interesting part of martial arts with a lot of people, unfortunately, I find. What can you do? Trying to explain, like, again, with the man called Tubbs, I used a Dragon Ball Z example to explain something about moving the chi in your body during one particular exercise. And for the rest of the time that, you know, me and this guy were friends, he's constantly coming back to, like, you know, like doing, you know, doing Kamehameha hands and stuff. It's just like, bro, that is extremely not where I was going with that example. Like, you could, that's not the correct way you were supposed to take it. It's like, I was trying to teach you the rationale for how you could use chi manipulation to fly. And you turned it into like, oh, Kamehameha, oh, I'll make my dick bigger. Oh, Kamehameha. Like,
oh. Wait, back up. What was that? They called that Bukujutsu technique, right?
Sky dancing.
Sky dancing. Yeah.
Yeah, probably there's a whole bunch of series where they call flying sky dancing. Like, they use the same name for it.
I probably butchered the Japanese version of that, but yeah. I actually, I don't know. Are we into a, can we get that analogy? Because now that you've said it, I kind of want to hear it, but I don't know.
Are Which one? Enough?
The sky dancing analogy that you gave, or is that something that you have to get when you work with you?
Oh man. Can I even remember what I've said? Sometimes I have that issue now that I'm getting older. I've forgotten some of the like regular examples I've used. So you'll have to refresh my memory. I'm not sure if I remember. Have I said anything about this before?
Not to me. That's the reason I was asking about it, because you were talking about the analogy to the sky dancing and I was
trying to explain like the way, so when they have that scene where Gohan, that girl Videl, you know,
Majin Buu Saga is trying to teach Videl how to fly.
To keep his secret, he has to teach her how to fly. So he teaches her about energy. And he's explaining it like, you know, you take your chi and you know, kind of make it a ball outside of you and you put it below you. And, you know, he's talking about like using it to make a counterbalance and force yourself up in the air, kind of thing. But he's talking about concentrating it and projecting it in a particular place. And I was trying to explain to the guy, I'm like, you know, when I have you do the magnetic force between the hands, the chi ball exercise, he's like, oh yeah, this and that. I was like, how do you think that works? The chi is in your dantian. It's in the center of your torso. You're projecting it from there to the hand. Then from the hand, you're projecting that out into the space away from the hand. You're intermingling two projected fields and then shaping the interference pattern that those two, you know, trying to explain it to him like that. And he's like, you know, talking about projecting the chi into his dick while he's having sex. I'm like, well, you know, you haven't been able to successfully talk to women for a couple of years. So I think you should really wait on trying to work on applications like that. You got to pull the chi before you can overwhelm them with this kind of like Goku makes just as, you know, he makes just the finger go Super Saiyan to like battle Trunks to like prove his skills. It's like, yeah, you can literally do that with your penis and treat your woman to a really nice time. I think you need to work on the basics of getting the chi generated first and then being able to feel and control it before you start trying to show off.
You know something? When they went into DB Super and they were talking about the emotional part of that, I think that might be what he was missing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, other people have heard lots of stories about this guy, but it basically comes down to a type of weird self-fulfilling prophecy about insecurity in a lot of ways, where like
I was going to say egotistic self-denial, but
that's one way you could describe it like that. But what you see with the guy is you know, instead of being a dominant man in public interactions, you know, a guy that comes across as in charge, collected, you know, capable, knows what he's doing, strong, he would be domineering, trying too hard, putting people down, being a bit of a bully, you know, a dickhead. Then in private, you know, he would kind of be really submissive when he'd be alone with women because of his preferences, you know, like being, you know, walked on kind of metaphorically and literally, shall we say. So, but that's the whole thing. Like he started having a lot of problems because it's like, look, man, you're setting people up for a really big disconnect, you know? You're like, you're putting out this like tough guy vibe. So you're attracting women that want to be around a strong man. And then when it's just you and them, you try to be the chick and you try to make them be the dude. And women like that are going to hate that situation. So that's why you're having this failure. And he's like, no, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm like, you don't know what you're doing. See, I thought I knew what I was doing with the martial arts stuff, with the chi stuff and the breathing, but I made one mistake. And then when it turned into Crohn's disease, my large intestine exploded. So see, if you're going to make a mistake like this, putting chi in your mind into your balls, you're going to, you know, you're going to blow your asshole out or something like this because you're having these chicks do this weird stuff to you. You know, your emotions are all fucked up. Everything's all weird and discalibrated. You know, you don't have a good, you don't have a good idea of what the baseline is. You don't know what normal is. So you can't play with enhancing or restricting or anything like that. You can't play with moving chi in and out of different areas, changing changing the operating voltage or whatever for different parts of your body, because you don't even know what baseline is yet. If you're confused about baseline, you can inadvertently build a weakness over decades. They talk about this in some of the like Chinese medical literature. You have to be careful with trying to do like internal alchemy type exercises, because you have to fix latent problems before you begin the training, because you don't want to activate and enhance a latent problem. That's one way to look at what my Crohn's disease was. It was a latent problem that I had built and cultivated without realizing it. Then when a certain set of circumstances hit me just right, and I tried to use my chi manipulation to help augment my healing, I just made it worse and turned it into something fucked up.
So, two things about that.
Yeah.
I lost one completely when the second one dawned on me. Whenever we're talking about that.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that before, but when I had talked to you about that before, it now that you said that, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it's one of those dangers, you know, that you never think about in trying to do specialized training. In certain senses, it's a one in a million thing. Like, it's almost impossible to get in this situation. But on the other hand, you know, this isn't happening to more people because most people are just playing. They're not really doing the training for these types of styles like I was. So,
well, that's what I was going to get at. It reminds me of, there are a lot of Okinawan masters. And there are a couple of them that you can pull up on YouTube. And, you know, these guys have been training every single day since they were younger than us. And now they're in their 80s. Some of them in their 90s. And there are some of them where it's like, yeah, no, I've given myself really bad hemorrhoids by doing that particular form and working on that particular thing, like Sanchin Kata, three battles.
Yeah.
It's exclusively an inner work kata.
Yeah.
It's they refer to it as the bodybuilding of karate, but it's bodybuilding through inner force, through the vital essence of the body. And these guys are like, yeah, no, I've given myself major digestive or physical problems from doing too much sanchin. Like some of them, the ones that have done it, they just say really bad hemorrhoids. But yeah, I could see how that would give you Crohn's.
With some of these,
I never thought of that before.
What it ended up being was, now here's the thing. Posture is a big deal. So I was driving, you know, one of the smaller highways in Massachusetts, you know, taking kind of a kind of backwoods way from Boston down to the suburban town, Scituate, Mass, where my parents had moved. This was probably about 13, 14 years ago at this point. So I'm in the passenger seat, driving is a girl I was dating at the time. We come up on a place where it's a dead stop because of traffic. Well, there's a person behind us that's not really paying attention, and they rear end us. So we get this jolt. I caught a slight spinal misalignment from this accident. And that was kind of the initial route for what became Crohn's disease, because that misalignment of the spine kind of messed up how my intestines sat in my body. So doing abdominal breathing, and especially as much reverse abdominal breathing as I do, it really messed it up over the next year or two. And then, you know, I got the sepsis and stuff, and everything came down as a result. But it all started with getting a little crook in my spine from, you know, getting rear-ended. So,
do you think you would have had that problem if you'd been wearing your turtle shell?
Probably not. If I'd been wearing the turtle shell, nothing would have happened. It just kind of would have been like a barely would have felt it. But, you know, this guy was probably going about 35 or so, and we were at a dead stop. So he hit us with a decent amount of force.
Little fender bender, no big deal.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't like, it wasn't an injury. I wouldn't say I was sore. Like, I didn't, you know, but in retrospect, I did have, you know, I found out during the MRIs and the scans when I was getting checked out and diagnosed with the initial Crohn's diagnosis that I had a little crook in the spine from it. So, you know, it's something that it took a while to get fixed. And then all the problems that resulted from it, you know, the malnourishment and all that other stuff took a lot of time to fix. So, but yeah, that's how it all started. People think that it started with the cat scratch fever, but really it started like a year and a half before that with poor driving. Well, looks like we lost Matt.
Yeah, I think he dipped off whenever he got back to get his boots.
Yeah. Yeah. So we should probably wrap this up at this point, since it seems like these late night sessions aren't really working for the two of them with their normal work hours.
Meanwhile, us two, where we're like, yeah, no, we're used to being up all night.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, this is my weekend, so, you know, I did get up early today. I woke up at like 7 this morning, but whatever. I'd be up until midnight or later tonight anyway.
Well, I mean, you see where I'm at.
I find my guards are finally, everything is straightened out. The guards are working. I've got the client kind of like subdued a little bit. It's just, you know, no one can mess with me. No one is bothering me. They did. I lost about 2 hours this afternoon because the construction on the back end of the property, they basically lit the sensor wires for the fire panel. Like, they lit it on fire in one of the rooms they were working on the back end of the building, these construction guys. So the whole fire system is like going apeshit. The fire department showed up. Things had to, like, the building engineer had to come from an hour away to like put the building into test. And, you know, my guard on site had to go around and lock all these extra doors because a whole bunch of doors get automatically unlocked for safety and shit. So it's a whole nightmare.
Yeah, I think my connection's starting to cut in and out too, because I started saying stuff and it just clipped right on through.
All right. Well, we'll wrap that up then.
Yeah, good old Dixie.
Right. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it having you, Lloyd. This is a fun episode. Nice and free form and rambling the way we like to do it. All right. Excellent. Take it easy, man.